Cyberterrorism and Cyberwarfare. Inspired by the interview with Kevin Mitnick. Quite recently, I read an interview with Kevin Mitnick in Slashdot.org site. It's pretty interesting, and the comments are even more so. A number of very inspiring points are there. The most renowned hacker of United States tries to clear his name before the general public at this site, Slashdot.org. He's speaking mostly to the professionals, programmers, maybe even hackers, certainly security folk, and technical journalists too. But insofar as I'm concerned, he tries quite a wrong-head approach to the problem. First of all, he describes the violations of human rights, violations of normal criminal court process when he was catched. He don't claim to be innocent, for sure. Certainly he is a hacker and he does recognize it. He may not attempt to capitalize on his fame without recognizing the point. But he says that all the matter was quite blown up in the court, that a couple of journalists write a book about him, and they warned him that if he won't cooperate, they would tell lies in their book, and he thinks they have done it. Well, insofar as I see it, it's not a point, really. He tells that all the matter of cyberterrorism is blown up. And so it was. And so it was in the time that he got catched. 10 years ago, the cyberterrorism was really a relatively remote problem. Not so anymore. They told that the magnitude of damages by Kevin Mitnick was about $300 million. And Kevin was so kind as to explain the standard procedures, how they did come by this number. You see, they just sum up the value of all code that he had illicitly viewed. It's the point. He viewed the code. He didn't sell it, and he most certainly didn't damage it. They didn't prove it, and they didn't really claim it. So, how to make it more understandable? It's just like you gone before the building of Pentagon. Now, before the building of Pentagon, you committed some petty crime. What might it be? Well, you just tried to look into the window of the building without actually trespassing on the property. Well, by the book of law, it may be a crime, and there may be some small punishment for it. But now, they're taking the cost, the price of the building of Pentagon, the price of everything what is kept in Pentagon, and they told that it's the sum of the damages you have done. It's pretty ridiculous. The Kevin's lawyers did cooperate with the court instead of protecting him. the prison administration told that he may use the phone to start nuclear warfare. Nice claim, nice point. Would he be president of United States or Soviet Union or China at least, but in his case it was really exaggerated. And once more, I don't think that's a point. The point is, today the world turns really very well technologically connected place. On internet you may reach any point in the world in the matter of parts of the seconds. You don't need even a minute it takes in some shuttle to get to the point. Electronically, it's almost instant. Just like that. And United States have on its territory, in its property, in property of its citizens really, most of the hardware of the system. A real lot of technology implemented in the hardware. So United States really should be afraid of any kind of cyberterrorism, and even if the threat was then exaggerated, there were some reasons for it. But I don't tell it, it was the reasons to break the human rights, the rights in the court of alleged hackers. Kevin was kept years in prison before he got his sentence legally. It's really a dirty story, and even that it's not the most important point. The point is, most of the people he spoke with weren't afraid of the implications. Well, it's not his private problem, it's problem of anyone who thinks that he got some human rights but won't be able to implement him. But after September 11, I don't think that the concept of human rights would really serve in the shape it took before. We are losing our rights, and still it may be better than losing civilization, than losing our lives, our very lives. It's not just the matter of security. It's a matter of survival. Well, so, the military hardware, like any hardware, gets more and more high technological, and it's got very well connected and vulnerable to potential hacker attack. And while Kevin Mitnick didn't really make had damages of $300 million, the point is he could. Did he but wish it, he could have done it alone, single-handedly. Now, what do you think about the military units consisting of hackers? The Pentagon certainly thinks about it. It starts its own hacker program, but the public relationship problems are really big. The United States approach to hackers seems quite counterproductive. You see, making horrible punishments for hackers in United States doesn't enable them really to bring in the hackers from Russia, the hackers from China, and so on. So, just on the brink of the age where all the warfare would be more technological than strictly military, United States trying to exterminate, yes, its own, its very own force of the hackers, and hackers of Europe, hackers of Ellis, who would have some respect to American law. Certainly those measures won't hurt any other kind of hacker. You see, you may create amazing technology, warplanes without pilot. They're up there. It's already existing technology. You may make tank without any human driver inside, military engines, great military engines, and very small insect-like military engines, without any human who would actually control them. Human makes the policy, software implemented over the net, and hardware fights. Nice, very nice. But like every computer system, this arrangement is extremely vulnerable to hacker attack. Now, you may not prevent your opponents to use hackers. Sorry. It's plainly impossible. But you may, what you actually may do, is bring your own hackers in force for protection of your hardware and for attack on the opponent's hardware. Sounds trivial. Now, the problem is simple for those who got little amounts of their small amounts of their own hardware and have a lot of enemy hardware to attack. The number of hackers you need is proportional of the amount of your hardware divided by the amount of your opponent's hardware. To tell simply, United States need a real lot of hackers. Any small enemy like North Korea, for example, like Iraq, which doesn't command large high technological resources, may do great damage with just a small force of hackers and protect their resources with just a small force of hackers. Europe and United States need a lot of hackers. And just at that moment, they're trying to punish, to exterminate their own hacker without being able to do the same with their opponent's hackers. Sorry, it sounds plain stupid. I'm not speaking about our current wars. Maybe we have a few years. And if we don't, if in a few years we won't develop technology that would rely really on the electronic and not military might to bring down the opponent, if we won't be able to do it, whatever was considered high technology weapons just 30 years ago, nuclear weapons, dirty bombs, chemistry, biological weapons would just bring down our civilization, because the only way to protect us from the attack by small forces, by small countries, by small militant groups, religious fanatics, etc., is to get electronical means of gathering information in real time, processing information in real time, and answering the threats a bit before they really arise. It's not just a question of territorially big, visible opponents like Iraq. Yes, he's an opponent. He's very dangerous. And nevertheless, he's far less dangerous than smaller, virtually invisible opponents. We don't even know whom we should infiltrate. By current intelligence services, we will never infiltrate every organization that may contain just a dozen of people. Sorry, it's not realistic. We need an electronic methods. We need engineers, we need programmers, And most of all, we need hackers who won't allow to turn our technology against us. Sorry for my English. Hope it was partly understandable. Thank you.